Examples of the process of change. The process of change, slavery. Slavery, the involuntary servitude of human beings, has existed since the beginning of history. Until the late 18th century, virtually every aspect of society accepted slavery as a normal part of human activity. The process of ending institutionalized slavery took nearly 200 years and began with individuals seeing the institution as morally wrong. This conviction spread to others, and eventually laws and reforms were passed abolishing slavery throughout the world. Historical perspective. Slavery has been associated with every type of society, from the simplest to the most complex, from the earliest times to the present. Slavery existed in most parts of the world in slightly differing forms until the 12th to 14th century. As the Western Holy Wars ended late in the 16th century, the trading of Africans became the predominant form of slavery in the world. The right to hold slaves was accepted by all major religions and by virtually every government in the world. European colonies in the West Indies saw the slave population grow from an estimated 86,000 in 1734 to nearly 500,000 in 1787. Slavery began in what would become the United States in 1619 with the first cargo of 20 Negroes. The colony's slave population had grown to 500,000 by 1775. Altogether, more than 5 million blacks were transported to the Western Hemisphere. Despite its inhumanity and size, the slave system aroused little protest until the 18th century, mainly due to the prevailing image of Negroes as subhuman. The movement to abolish slavery. Rational thinkers of the Enlightenment in Europe began to criticize the institution of slavery in the late 17th century. The criticism pointed out its violation of the rights of man, and religious groups condemned it on moral grounds for its brutal qualities. In Britain and America, the Quakers were the first significant opponents of slavery, beginning their criticism in 1671. By the late 18th century, a general climate of moral disapproval to slavery existed, but few reforms or laws were passed until the next century. The image of blacks began to change in the minds of whites as writers portrayed the black slave as a human being. The political and social institution of slavery came under increasing attack in the early 19th century. Early reforms to outlaw the slave trade were set in motion in England in 1783, leading to its abolition in 1807. In the United States, the Constitutional Convention in 1787 considered a prohibition of the trade, but to satisfy Southern interests, agreed to delay action 20 years. Accordingly, in 1807, the United States prohibited the slave trade as well. However, this early success had little effect on slavery in the Deep South, the West Indies, and South America. Political momentum grew in the early 19th century, resulting in passage of a law to free all slaves in the British colonies in 1833. The French completed their process of addressing slavery in 1848 with the freeing of all slaves in their colonies. The Danes abolished slavery in the same year. By the late 1850s, all the mainland Spanish American republics had abolished slavery, and it had virtually disappeared in Mexico, Central America, and Chile. The Dutch freed their slaves in 1863, the Spanish in 1873, and Brazil was the last nation in the Americas to abolish slavery in 1888. Ending slavery in the United States. At the time of the American Revolution, the notion of basic human rights and freedom provided an important moral framework for the anti-slavery movement. The Revolution led to a perception of the problem of slavery as inconsistent with basic rights. Over a period of years, however, this inconsistency was rationalized as the principles of the Revolution became more distant. The deeply rooted slavery system of the South was strongly defended during the 1800s as the cotton economy developed. A shift in the approach used by some of the early anti-slavery reformers took place around 1830. What began as a staunch, nonviolent movement found increasing numbers of abolitionists in the 1850s resorting to violence. The opportunity to continue a process of reform was slowed by reactions in both the North and South to the extremist approaches of reformers. Dialogue became non-existent, and political lines were drawn, leading to the tragedy of the Civil War. Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, published in 1852, helped to convince most Northerners and many Europeans that slavery was immoral and intolerable. The power of that conviction sustained Americans through the bloodiest, most costly war in American history. That same conviction on the part of large numbers of people in Europe prevented England and France from coming to the aid of the Confederacy. The role of the individual in building a movement. The original movement had begun with individuals, few in number, addressing the basic moral and ethical rights of human beings. Yale historian David Bryan Davis, in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Slavery in Western Culture, describes the role of individuals in the movement to abolish slavery. Quote, "By the early 1770s, in Britain, France, and the North American colonies, there were forces in motion that would lead to organized movements to abolish the African trade and the entire institutional framework which permitted human beings to be treated as things. Although slavery was nearly as old as human history, this was something new to the world. By now we should have some understanding of the cultural and intellectual changes which made possible so dramatic a shift in perception. On one side were the classical and Christian theories of servitude, which tended to rationalize the brute fact that forced labor had been an integral part of the American experience. On the other side were increasing strains in the traditional system of values, the emergence of new modes of thought and feeling, and a growing faith in the possibility of moral progress, which was to some extent associated with the symbolic meaning of the New World. But in the last analysis, such trends and contexts and backgrounds are only abstractions. No matter how ripe the time, there would be no coalescing of anti-slavery opinion until specific decisions and commitments were taken by individual people." End quote. The process of change, women's suffrage. American women won the right to vote in 1920 with the passage of the 19th Amendment. Their victory was the result of a struggle against enormous odds that took more than 80 years. Opposition to the movement came from different quarters at different times: men, the churches, big business, alcohol interests, and political bosses. The opponents drew on biblical injunctions restricting the role of women, from fears about sexuality and concerns about women's lack of education. In the 1830s, married women had no legal identity apart from their husbands. In colonial common law, a woman was not even entitled to custody of her children in case of divorce. Except for Quakers, whose meetings emphasized equality and religious spontaneity, it was not acceptable for women to speak in public. Yet suffrage prevailed in spite of these overwhelming odds. It began with a few motivated individuals. The role of individuals. Three women were at the center of the women's suffrage movement: Elizabeth Cady Stanton, its philosopher; Lucy Stone, its most gifted orator; and Susan B. Anthony, its best organizer. Elizabeth Stanton and Lucretia Mott attended a World Anti-Slavery Convention in London in 1840. Because they were women, they were denied seats and forced to sit in the gallery behind a curtain. As a result, Ma and Stanton organized the first Women's Rights Convention at Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848. There they declared that, quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal," end quote. Lucy Stone was a Christian reformer drawn to the women's cause by the Seneca Falls Declaration of Sentiments. Susan B. Anthony met Elizabeth Stanton at a temperance convention. Later, when she was denied a seat at the Men's State Temperance Convention at Syracuse, New York, Susan B. Anthony became a full-time champion of women's rights. Building agreement. The suffragettes, in spite of interruptions by the Civil War and World War I, conducted 296 campaigns at the national level and 527 in the states. They introduced a suffrage amendment every year from 1868 to 1896 and initiated referenda state by state. These efforts built a base of support in the middle class. By 1910, the women's suffrage movement was able to claim only 4 Western states after more than 70 years of effort. But the stage was set. Momentum was starting to build. In 1912, 3 more Western states voted for suffrage as Teddy Roosevelt's Progressive Party took up the cause. By 1914, a total of 11 states had adopted women's suffrage. In 1916, both major parties announced their support. 7 more states, including New York, granted women the right to vote in 1917. The spread of suffrage sentiment during those years was reflected in the growth of NAWSA. The membership of the National American Women's Suffrage Association went from 13,150 in 1893, to 17,000 in 1905, to 45,501 in 1907, to 75,000 in 1910, to 100,000 in 1915, to 2,000,000 in 1917. In January 1918, the 19th Amendment passed the House of Representatives, and by June 1919, it had passed the Senate. Tennessee completed the process in 1920, when it became the last state to ratify the amendment and make it law. After more than 80 years of work, what began with a handful of committed women and men came to fruition. American women had the right to vote. The references for this part of the article are Barbara Dechard, The Women's Movement, published in 1975, and Paige Smith, The Nation Comes of Age, 1981. The Process of Change, Civil Rights. The Civil Rights Movement began in the United States shortly after the Civil War. Although slavery had been abolished, blacks still had far less than equal status in our land. In 1896, the United States Supreme Court held that the separate but equal principle was constitutional, guaranteeing legal segregation. A lone voice of protest was Justice Harlan, who said, quote, "Our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens," end quote. Historical perspective. In 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, was founded to seek equal treatment of blacks through legal and judicial processes. The next year, the Urban League was founded with a goal of obtaining equal employment, housing, and welfare services for blacks. Progress was so slow that it wasn't until the outbreak of World War II in 1941 that a real shift began. The war produced a demand for soldiers and factory workers that brought great numbers of blacks into the labor force for the first time. When racial equality in employment became a necessity of national defense, blacks proved themselves in their jobs and made it clear that they were not being fairly treated by our national laws. In 1948, President Truman, by executive order, prohibited racial discrimination in the armed forces. The role of the individual in building a movement. By 1954, the mood of the country had shifted sufficiently that the Supreme Court unanimously held in Brown versus the Board of Education that the doctrine of separate but equal was unconstitutional for our schools. 1 year later came what Lewis Lomax, a renowned black sociologist, called the birth of the Negro Revolt. On December 1, 1955, in Montgomery, Alabama, Mrs. Rosa Parks was arrested when she refused to give up her bus seat to a white man. For many blacks, it was the last straw. The act proved an inspiration to Martin Luther King Jr., who, with other black leaders in the city, organized a boycott of the buses. That boycott was the beginning of a movement that would confront the national conscience in the years to come. For the next 4 years after the Montgomery bus boycott, the main action of the civil rights movement took place in the courts, primarily in school desegregation cases. The crisis in Little Rock in 1957 alarmed the nation, revealing intense racism as the National Guard escorted blacks through hostile crowds to formerly all-white schools. Building agreement. By 1960, the movement was gathering force, organizing sit-ins to desegregate lunch counters. In the following year, the Freedom Rides began to assert rights for interstate travel. Violence erupted on the campus of the University of Mississippi in 1962 when James Meredith enrolled as the first black student. A great gap still remained between the rulings of the Supreme Court and the laws and attitudes of the South. Throughout the protesting, angry white mobs attacked nonviolent protesters. The contrast was overwhelming, and the American public conscience was outraged. Public opinion was shifting quickly in all places except the Deep South. As a culmination of this new support, a mass rally took place in Washington, D.C. on August 28, 1963, when 250,000 people from all over the country came to demonstrate their support for the civil rights movement. At issue was the integration of schools, restaurants, housing, recreation, buses, and equality of job opportunity. It was before this huge crowd that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous "I Have a Dream" speech, inspiring a nation that was awakened and ready to move. In the following year, the Civil Rights Act was passed, the first such legislation in 82 years, and in 1965, President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law. The majority of the population had adopted the ideas expressed in the civil rights movement, and the laws now reflected that support. That shift took nearly 70 years to move from the early adopters to a majority. The implementation is still going on today. The references for this segment are Leon Friedman, Civil Rights Reader, 1967, Alan P. Grimes, Equity in America, 1964, read by Anne Milholland.